This is a tape for heritage development. Today is September 16th. No, it's the 17th, isn't it? 1981. And we're in Baden, PA. The narrator, would you say your name, please?
Sister Consuelo Heaps, H-E-A-P-S.
And the interviewer is Sister Sally Witt. Sister Consuelo, I want to ask you some things about your very early years and your growing up. Was that in Duquesne, PA?
Yes. Duquesne now is not anything like the Duquesne that I grew up in. And I suppose I omit what it's like just now and go back to the days that I grew up. I was born November 17th, 1903. My father came from Cleveland, Ohio. He was an engineer, and I suppose he came to Duquesne for work, I don't know. And my mother was Monica Canavan, C-A-N-E-V-I-N. At the time I was born, she was married when she was 19, I believe, and she was 20 years old when I was born. My father was 33 or so. Duquesne was starting to be a thriving steel mill. It was called the Carnegie Steel Works at that time. And at some period along the years, it was bought up by the United States Steel. So I don't know when that happened. But my father was very good at his work. And I remember that when I was a year old, well, first of all, he had lost a foot. When I was, I don't know which foot, when in Cleveland he was hopping boxcars with some boys. He was about 16. And then when I was a year old, he lost the whole leg through an accident in the mill. And you know, we were always glad that it was that particular leg that he lost. And being just a year old, you know, it was pretty hard on my mother having me to take care of. And at that time, I didn't know this until years later, because I seemed to get enough, you know, cared for and enough to eat, et cetera, when you're old. But I've learned that the Carnegie Steelworks didn't give any type of compensation to their employees.
You mean for an accident?
For an accident, yes. The one thing that he got was a new leg, an artificial limb. I remember the name of the company in Pittsburgh that made them, Hanger, H-A-N-G-E-R. And every 5 years, as I said, Papa, we always called him Papa, and my mother was Mama. Papa got a new leg, whether he needed it or not. And the legs were, you know, always a little bit better than the 5 years before, so, and he had no compensation, so he took these legs. And I used to give the old leg, he'd keep one spare in the cupboard, and he'd give the other leg to the, I suppose, the Salvation Army or some such organization. And Papa's wooden leg, coming on to my little later years, but Papa's wooden leg was just quite a thing, you know, with us. We'd sit down at the supper table, and we'd get under the table and take pins and try to be sure we put the pin in Papa's wooden leg and not his other leg. And I don't know why, because, you know, we should know by then which was his wooden leg and which was his other leg. I don't even think it was made of wood, cork or something like that, because my mother gave him thumbtacks and he used to fasten his sock up on that foot with, you know, mm-hmm. leg with a thumbtack. And I'm going to go on with Papa's wooden leg, because it was a joke to me later. He kept the leg, the one he was wearing, right beside him at the bed. And my mother had a square of linoleum, that she put on the carpet, because we had carpets on the floor in the bedrooms, and he put that leg on that, and he had an oil can, because he did not at that time have ball bearing legs, and they had oil every morning. So he would, you know, oil the leg preparatory to putting it on. Later on, the legs that were being supplied had ball bearings. You didn't need the oil can anymore.
Where, I don't understand about the oil.
The mechanism, the screws or joints or whatever, you know, because when his leg was off to the knee, above the knee.
Uh-huh.
All right, when he sat down, you know, it bent.
He
walked, it had to, you know. He learned he walked very well. You wouldn't know that he had an artificial limb,
mm-hmm.
except that sometimes he threw it a little as he walked, you know, because he was tired. I remember the, what do you call them, stockinettes or something that my mother had to knit to go over the stump, and he'd have, three or four of them, and a big piece of lamb's wool, he used to buy that by a big package, and, you know, put a clean piece of lamb's wool at the base of the sock, and my mother had to knit these stockings or socks, whatever they were, a very fine yarn without the slightest kind of a knot or a bump, because that whole stump was extremely sensitive, and one sock after the other went on. I would say maybe there were three, you know, till he would then put on the artificial limb, which had a lacing, that was a leather case of some kind, you know. I don't know what you'd call it. It was made of leather, I remember. And he would lace that onto the stump to hold it on. Then it was a strap up over his shoulder, so that he could walk very well. In fact, in our town, I remember a couple of times there was one time a boy who had lost his leg in an injury of some kind, and the hanger company had my father teach that boy to walk, because my father could walk without, you know, making it apparent that he had an artificial limb, and he would teach the boy how to walk without making it obvious that it was an artificial limb. But and Papa's wooden leg, the extra one in the cupboard, you know, was always a joke to us. And he didn't seem to mind it. Although one of my brothers, Al, was, we all loved my father, but this little boy was, I forget where he ranked in the family of nine, but somewhere down there towards the end. He imitated my father. One thing my father had to do was walk up steps one at a time, especially the steps. I don't know whether he walked up other things again. I mean, other parts of the buildings. In our house, he had to walk up, you know, put first one leg up and then the other. And he came down the same way. And whether that was just precautionary or whether he really could, you know, I don't remember ever asking him anything about that. But this little fellow was walking just like my father was walking. He went up the steps and down the steps, one, you know, put one foot on the step and then the other foot on the step, same way coming down. And we had quite a time breaking him of that, because he was just learning to walk, and teach him to walk properly. So back to our town. It was a small town, and everybody knew everybody. And it was a friendliness about it. And I loved to go out with my father, because we'd go along a street, and he'd always call to the man or woman across the street, and they would call to him. You know, you just called across. Hello there, Bill, how are you today? Or Bill would say, hi, Jean. How are things going in your place, Jean? My father's name was Eugene. And it just was, you know, such a feeling of comedy there, that you just felt you knew everybody and you just knew all about them. there were no paved roads. Maybe the main street was Grant Avenue. Oh, in case you don't know, Duquesne is on a hill. From the Monongahela River, it's a level part, takes in the United States Steel. It's quite level. And then from Duquesne Avenue up, it's just, you know, one hill after the other. So we all learned to walk the hills and not complain either. There were no streetcars, no buses. And of course, when I was a child, we didn't have any automobiles either. Because don't forget, I was born in 1903, and everybody used a horse and buggy or a wagon. I loved it because, you know, the muddy roads, the dirt roads, and the excuses you made for coming through the field when you weren't supposed to walk through the muddy field, you know. I always protected my brothers by, you know, going out to the end of the street and warning them that Papa's home, you know, don't come through the field, because he never put a hand to us, but I think his lash, you know, his tongue was enough to, you know, whatever he did, I don't know, but, oh, we'd just rather have my mother take the persuader. She had a stick that on top of the kitchen cabinet that she called her persuader. But if we didn't go, the minute she told us to go and do something, she'd get the persuader down. So we'd rather have her use a persuader than have him give us any kind of a punishment. And I don't know whether he ever tried it or not, but I know she forbade him. He was never to punish us, and she would take care of the punishing. We were just as bad as any other next-door neighbor, you know, child. It's just fun to do things that you shouldn't do. Our church, Holy Name Church, was on First Street. Now, there would be the first street down next to the railroad was, they called it Duquesne Avenue. Then the next block up was First Street.
Is it running parallel with the river?
Yes, parallel with the river. And then we had from 1st to 7th, and the next street was Arles, A-U-R-I-L-E-S. The next was Catherine. And after that, there were just fields. It was really, you know, people lived up there, yes. That we live up there now too, but we have a name to our street. But at that time there were no, you know, name streets. You just sit up on the hill or, you know, up there above, up over the hill, something like that.
Were some of the houses company houses?
No, I don't know anything about company houses. There was a section called Patterson Hollow. I think that they looked like pretty rundown places, and they may have been company houses. But I think there are black people living all through there now. I don't know who lived there when I was a child. And, well, I guess, but I didn't know anything about company houses. The people in our town, at that time, it was, the population was mainly from every part of the world. You know, all countries. Hungarians, Italians, Polish, English, Scotch. It was just every nationality represented in the town.
Were the people mixed, or did the Polish live in one area and Hungarians in one area?
Yes, they were not mixed. They lived in areas mostly, especially, and I really apologize for this term, but anybody that wasn't born in Ireland or England or the United States, we just labeled them all hunkies. And I really am sorry about that because, you know, they were very good people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's our childhood term for them, hunkies. And I think the Italians were probably wops. I didn't know too many Italians at that time. And the church churches were nationality churches. Holy Name Church on First Street was Irish, and up on the hill on Arles was St. Joseph Church, which was German. Now the Polish church was out in Polish Hill, we call it. So, you know, then we lived at one time above Arles for a short time. My grandfather had a house there, and we lived with him. And I think that I remember that although we were Irish descent and we lived or went to Holy Name Church, I was baptized in St. Joseph Church. And why I wasn't baptized in Holy Name, I didn't question a whole lot. And the only one that could ever have told me that would be my mother. And when I entered, I had to have my birth certificate, or baptism mm-hmm. certificate, rather. And I had to go to a German church to get it. St. Joseph's, the German church, see? And why I had to go there, I never questioned too much about it. But I figured out years later that the horse and buggy that my godparents drove to take me down to be baptized probably couldn't get down the hill. So they just stopped off and had me baptized in the German church. But then I don't know how I ever made it into the Irish church after that. But we were, you know, strictly speaking, and belonged to the Irish parish. And even today, that is a nationality church to a great extent. Although people have, you know, mm-hmm. into different churches now, it's still basically St. Joseph's is the German church. Holy Name is the Irish church. And the Polish church has moved into town.
Oh.
It's St. Hedwig's now. And there's another church there, Holy Trinity.
Excuse me.
Well, so much for the churches, you know. I really am sorry about that distinction, but we had that.
You said your father was an engineer, and I wanted to ask you what kind of an engineer.
All right, in engineering, he was a locomotive engineer, and that's how he lost his leg when I was a year old, was on the train, you know, the locomotive.
Oh.
He was what they called the narrow gauge, it's G-A-U-G-E.
Mm-hmm.
What they hauled in his train or the cars behind him were this coal, I believe, or slag, or well, not slag, but some kind of materials
mm-hmm.
in the mill. And he had a buddy, a brakeman, a buddy. And that's every train had an engineer and a buddy, a brakeman. And he always called him his buddy.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't go out of the mill. That was the broad gauge. So he just operated throughout the mill, see, on a narrow gauge. And one thing that I remember that was a disadvantage, of course, wages were sufficient, that I would say we had a middle class, you know, living. But one thing that made it all difficult was that they were paid by tonnage. And I think that has something to do with the amount of steel they put out or something that the men were. And my mother never knew from payday to payday how much money my father's envelope was going to have. And of course they were paid, you know, in cash. She used to say that just when she had the ends ready to meet, you know, make the ends meet, somebody moved the ends. So I think that she found it sometimes a little difficult, you know, if he didn't have as much money in the his pay as he thought he would. But we weren't, you know, for want. We had very happy childhood days. We had happy holidays and whatnot. besides going into those mud roads and everything and everybody being friendly with everybody, and I know the town wasn't, I told you, about 7 or 8 or 10 streets, you know, up the hill, even in the wind. You know, Grand Avenue was the main street. Then the next street was Hamilton Avenue. And then, you know, I don't know, there were just more houses, and then you went over the bridge, and then that was the end of it. Kennywood was over there later on. I don't suppose Kennywood was put up when I was born, but very shortly afterwards, I think, from what I've read. And it's the same way the other direction, you know, going towards McKeesport. We didn't have a lot of streets. We were divided into wards. I remember that. And you always, if you wanted to tell where somebody lived, you always said that they lived in the first ward or the second ward or the third ward. And that all came into my little story sometime later, you know, about the wards. But people were very, very friendly, as I told you. When you went down street on Saturday night, now going down street on Saturday night was the big thing you did. You got all dressed up and you went down street, which means that you went to Grand Avenue. And Grand Avenue was just a business section from the bigger stores, like a 5 and 10, a couple of drug stores, and I think there was a bank. That would be like from Duquesne Avenue up to probably 4th Street, be about 4 blocks. And then the other streets, or the other portion up the hill, they were smaller stores, maybe a shoemaker, you know, or a shoe repairman or something like that, or barber shops or something. The town had a couple stores, and it had a 5 and 10, but everybody went down street.
Was there anything specifically for recreation down street?
There was a movie house at one time, the Grant, I think we called it. And then when we got really prosperous, I guess down on First Street there was a Merlin, I think was the name of it, but it didn't last long. For a nickel, you got into the movie and you got a little bag of candy, so I think they were really, you know, catering to the kids to get them there. I know one thing, every Saturday afternoon as a child, I went to the movie. But, you know, I had to go because, see, we had The Perils of Pauline, a serial, and you just had to go and see what was happening to Pauline this Saturday and the next Saturday, you know, kept all the kids going. And my mother was easy with us in the sense that she would let us go to the movies, but we always had to go to confession. I think we went to confession first.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we were good because she didn't worry about our state of our soul going to the movie. There were, I remember one friend of mine who was not allowed to go to the movies because she had to go to confession. And then after confession, her mother didn't allow her to go to a movie. So I don't think we had any movies during the week. Maybe we did. The movies were silent, of course. And there was a family there by the name of Malloy. They probably owned that movie house. And in the back of it, Mrs. Malloy played the piano. And Mr. Malloy and the children later, they sang. And especially some pictures, you know, might come up and there'd be a song that would be written about it or something like it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they would sing in between the reels. Of course, the operator had to change reels, so that took a little time, and that's when the piano playing and so on went on.
I wonder if that would be part of the same family that has that Malloy funeral home there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The father. Mm-hmm. And then the son, you know, went on. And then Alberta, the daughter. And the Malloys have all died now. And Mercedes Malloy was the last, but she was not a Malloy. She was married to one They're not the Molloys that we had a dentist there too, but it's not the same family. They were separate, different families. There were three families of Molloy in town. And but this one, and they, after she died, there was a company from McKeesport took over. It's called Strip or something like that. Has that funeral home, and it has moved up Kennedy Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
The church was on the corner of Kennedy and First, and on up the hill, there were a couple other funeral homes came in town. I remember also Aldebrand. It's out of business now. I think just the one man had a funeral home for a time, and then when he died, that was the end of it. And that was down on First Street. I think maybe the Molloys weren't in the funeral business when they were doing this entertainment business in the theater. Sometimes we went to McKeesport to a movie.
Then how did you travel to McKeesport?
A streetcar. A streetcar came through Duquesne from Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
We'd come down through Squirrel Hill and through Homestead and Munhall and into Duquesne, along Duquesne Avenue, and cross the McKeesport Bridge into McKeesport, turn around, go back again. And that was the only, you know, motor transportation. For a few years, when I was in the early grades, I don't remember exactly when it happened or closed up, but there was a streetcar that started down around First Street, came up to Kennedy and turned, went up Kennedy Avenue to the top of the hill, and then turned around and came back. And everyone called it the Toonerville Trolley, because that was a cartoon series at one time, Toonerville Trolley. And I don't know if I ever wrote, and I suppose I did, but our biggest thrill was that we were out for recess at school, or you know, way into going to school, and we'd take two pins, put them on the tracks of the car, and you know, making a cross, and then wait for the streetcar to go over it, and then those two pins were like, you know, molded together.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to say it? Them together, I guess you could pull them apart, but that was our really sporty, you know, making crosses. You can get two pins. There was a lot of good sled riding in Duquesne because of the hills. Just wonderful sled riding. And after automobiles came along, there were certain streets that were marked off just for sled riding and cars, or automobiles, we called them. Autos were not allowed to go on those streets because the kids doing the sled riding there. So we all, and we used bobsleds.
What does that look like? Does a bobsled look
like? A bobsled?
Yeah.
No. Oh, it was a long sled, and I don't remember it had much of a head on it, you know, the beginning part, but you could get any number of kids on a bobsled.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good number. And all sizes, you know, you had to keep your feet up off the streets weren't cleaned, you know, so you had a lot of packed snow. Just keep your feet on and hold on to the one in front of you. And you know, you just go a good distance down those hills and then get yourself on a hill that, you know, had a level place when you got off.
Uh-huh.
Like you could go down Fifth Street, I remember, was a real good place to sled ride, because it was a bridge at the foot of the hill. It would go down Fifth Street, see, and that would be Priscilla Avenue. And then you would go across Priscilla to the bridge, the Fifth Street Bridge. And to your left of the Fifth Street Bridge was this hollow, Patterson Hollow. But later that bridge is filled in. Under it, you know, it's all filled in.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, I heard some sisters laughing about being told that you know, given directions to somebody, you go here and then you go across the Fifth Street Bridge. And they couldn't find the Fifth Street Bridge. Well, the Fifth Street Bridge is, you know, all filled in with dirt, but we still call it the Fifth Street Bridge, that section. No other way to designate it except the Fifth Street Bridge. So we do. I was home just recently, and the sister that Mary Ellen went up home with me, and she just couldn't get over that there were no names of streets. I had to tell her, you know, we turned here, and I described the place. And she said, well, don't you have any names on these streets? And I said, well, no. And she said, well, how do people get around? I said, well, everybody knows the name of the street, you know, without having a name on it. And I think up in the trees somewhere, you might find a name here or there, or a battered name that had been, you know, kids along the years had battered down, but we didn't have any names on our streets. Everybody knew where it was. There was one big thing that I remember about, you said something about, you know, entertainment, what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Besides going to Kennywood, which was, you know, really great. We walked to Kennywood. There were two bridges to Kennywood, but we walked them. And the other thing was we'd get for 5 cents or 10 cents, you could go into Pittsburgh, and we went to the museum. I really knew the museum. And I could take you right through there and tell you where every section was, because we'd take a little lunch, you know, and we'd have an extra dime for ice cream or something, you know. But that was really great. I never ventured much over to the north side where they had other, you know, I remember the Buell Planetarium was up right now, but there were other things, but it was the museum along there in Forbes Street in Pittsburgh. That was really our favorite.
How old were you when you'd take a bus or a streetcar into Pittsburgh?
When I was able to do that, I probably was in my early teens, because I remember that I worked in the time that I was 15. I don't know if my first job was in Pittsburgh or not, but other girls in the class with me too, we, you know, got jobs in the summertime, and I worked at McCreary's in Pittsburgh, which later it seems to me became Joseph Horn.
Oh.
And there was a Frank and Cedar, I know that's gone
mm-hmm.
now too. But I had a good job there at McCreary's. I started out as a wrapper, but, you know, for the 3 summer months, it was just great. And once we were 15, we had our working papers, and during the school year, we all worked either in the 5 and 10 in Duquesne. When I say we all, I mean, you know, the group of seniors around me, the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then we worked in the Keysport also, in the 5 and 10. But it was good because you not only sold the thing, you had to be behind the counter, and you really sold the pencils or the tablets or the candy or whatever it was, you know. And you took the money, and you made the change, and you wrapped the thing right there at the counter.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a central business they have now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that when I was in my junior summer, my junior year, between my junior and senior year, that I was able to get a job over in Braddock, which was across the river from Duquesne. Not directly across, but across from Kennywood, which wouldn't be far off. And I worked for Nugent's, a department store, which was changing hands right then. And my first little job there was assisting a woman who was an auditor, and she was auditing the books for the transfer. And so I helped her. And I was just there a few weeks when the girl who was, I guess you would call her secretary, to the president of the Nugent's ran off and got married flame ran off and got married. But she didn't show up on Monday, and the story was that she, you know, had run off and gotten married. So Mr. McCann, who was my boss, asked me if I would take this job. Well, I have to tell you more about Hoi Ning High School and why I was equipped to take it as a junior. I took it. Well, that meant I had to, you know, go into the boss's office every day and take dictation and type his letters and so on. Coming back to my school, I want to tell you a little bit about Hoi Ning High School and the education we got. You might wonder what runoff is, and maybe most people know, I don't know. But that was a term that was very common when I was growing up. It meant that a girl who didn't have her parents' consent, or she wasn't of age, or for one reason or other, she wanted to get married, so she would literally run off. And she would go with the young man, and somewhere along the line, they went to Wellsburg in West Virginia. I remember it was one place. I think it's like the only place I can remember now is Wellsburg, West Virginia. Well, that town was probably equipped with someone who could give them a marriage license, you know, and buy a ring and whatever. And a justice of the peace, might have been ministers too, but I just remember the justice of the peace would marry them. Well, you know, that kind of settled it. But that just seemed to be, I don't want to say common, but it happened often, you know, that she ran off and got married. And it's a quaint almost, I think, in a way of saying it, but they really did.
Would they come back and live in the town?
Yes, And most of the time, as far as I remember, their parents would let her get married, as if she were a Catholic. She would be married by the priest, you know, at the time. It took about 2 weeks to talk to the pastor and get the bands through and all that kind of a thing. But that was just, that's how I got my job anyhow. And then I can tell you about Hoi Ning High School. We were affiliated with the Catholic University of America. And that meant that we took the course of study that was laid out by the Catholic University, and our examinations came from the Catholic University. They were little printed papers. And the then our papers were sent there, and they were corrected there, and the marks given. Now, we paid a quarter for every examination we took. And I have a notion now, Sister Florence never told us, but I have a notion now that it was some student, you know, who would do the correcting of the papers, and I guess he got the quarter. I suppose that was the way it was. But it made, you know, good, and it was a fact that the sister did not correct your papers. The examination was not made out by her, and so on. The curriculum was really stiff. It wasn't easy, and we had to buy the books, and they were not cheap even in that day. I had a brother who went through high school with me in the same class because he had skipped grade. I have to tell you why I spent 5 years in high school. I don't want you to think that I was so dumb, but I guess I better go back there to the beginning of the high school deal. When I graduated from Hoi Ning High School, we did not have a Catholic high school. So the first year I had to spend in the public high school.
You mean when you finished grade school, there was no Catholic high school?
Yes, right. There was no Catholic high school. We took the public school examinations after eighth grade, and also diocesan. But the public high school, the idea there was that you couldn't go into a public high school without having passed their examinations. And then you pass the diocesan examinations in order to get out of the eighth grade to begin with, see? All right, the public high school, counseling year, we were, you know, they always give you extra reading material or things to read, books to read. And we had a Robert Louis Stevenson's Westward Ho. And in that book, we read that there was some reference to the Pope's son. Well, Eileen and I were not going to let anybody say that the Pope had a son, any Pope, any time, since, you know, the beginning of the church. So we told the teacher, and he told us to go to the principal. He said we would not read it. We went to the principal, and he called Father Shanahan, our pastor, and told him that these two girls would not read the assigned reading. And the reason was, well, I suppose Father Shanahan had a laugh to himself, because somewhere in history, some Pope did have a son, but Eileen and I could not let that be said. So they gave us another book. I don't remember the book, the alternate book, to read instead. But that had to go from the teacher to the principal to our pastor and back. So, and the militant Catholic, when I come back to the playground, I'll talk about that. All right. Our high school, as I said, was not opened when I was coming out of the eighth grade. All right, during that time then, they did open the high school, and we had excellent teachers. I heard that they were the best in the community. We had Sister Florence, the one who was a principal at that time. And she was a very, very studious person. And not all of us did this, but some of us. We took the first 2 years, we had both the academic course of study and the commercial, which meant that we were in the class before 8 o'clock in the morning. We just took a few minutes lunch. We could go home. We never had a lunch room at Duke Maine in the schools. And then we would come right back, and we had we'd stay until after 4 o'clock. I don't remember how late, but we, you know, just, it was a real jam course, because it was a very good course in business subjects. Like, we had shorthand and typewriting and bookkeeping, and we had a little business law one time, business English. Then we took the complete course of academic subjects also. So in the first 2 years in, we were graduated as about our some old ceremony, because some of the girls took that much and then left, didn't take the academic. Well, then we went on with our academic work, finished, you know. But that meant that Eileen and I were in the public school one whole year, see, before this Holy Name High School was opened. Well, I wanted to go to Holy Name High School, you know, go back and start right away. But my father was not a Catholic, although he was a Presbyterian. But he was a very broad-minded man, and as long as he had told my mother that we could all go to the Catholic school, you know, he didn't renege on any part of it. So once I knew that, I talked to Sister Florence, and from September up until December, I went to her. I went to the public school, because you would be reported the truant officer if you didn't go to school. And I also went to Sister Florence in the, I don't remember how many evenings, and took the same subjects that she was teaching to the freshmen in Holy Name School. Now, I'm doing sophomore work in the public high school. At the same time, I'm going back to Sister Florence to get whatever subjects I weren't covered, see, because she wasn't teaching exactly the same subjects that the public school taught in the freshman year. So I had two loads of work to carry, and I did, besides helping my mother with the children. All right, after Christmas, I asked my father on Christmas Day then if I could go to the Holy Name High School. And he said, you are in high school, you know, and so on. What was the idea? And he didn't know that I was doing this. And I said, well, I had, you know, been going to school, and I was ready to go into Hoi Ning High School. So he parried a little bit about it, and finally he said yes. So I started then in the second semester of Hoi Ning School as a freshman again, which gave me 5 years in high school. But it was worth it.